Grace, mercy, and peace to you from God our Father and from the Lord Jesus Christ. So tradition has it that on July the 8th, 1776, an elderly bellman waiting in the steeple of the Pennsylvania State House longed for a word from the Continental Congress that independence had been declared, and by the ringing of that bell would summon the people of Philly to the first reading of the Declaration of Independence. But the bellman had his doubts about the resolve of the Continental Congress. His grandson was below, eavesdropping through the doors where the Congress was meeting. And when he heard the decision, he yelled up to his grandfather, "Ring, grandfather, ring." Now, that story first appeared in 1847 and so captured the imagination of the people of our nation that the Liberty Bell has forever been associated with the Declaration of Independence and historians, as historians do when they research. Historians doubt that that story ever happened. Apparently, the steeple of the State House was in such poor repair that it probably couldn't handle the weight of the bell at that point. However, the Liberty Bell's association with July 4th still rings out loud. Across our land, across the world, the bell still rings out liberty. So the question for us that we're going to think about today is who is willing to ring that bell? But before we do that, just a little more history about the Liberty Bell. Do you remember William Penn? He was the Quaker that established that territory, that colony of what would be called Pennsylvania. And he was very forward-thinking on liberty, religious liberty, citizens' liberties, Native American liberties. He was ahead of his time. And so, on the 50th anniversary of William Penn's writing of the Charter of Privileges, which set forth these liberties, the state House of Pennsylvania ordered a commemorative bell to be forged in honor of William Penn. And they chose this inscription on the bell. It came from the Old Testament. Imagine that. Not only from the Bible, but it came from the Old Testament, from Leviticus chapter 25, verse 10. And on the top of the bell, it reads, "Proclaim liberty throughout the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." Proclaim liberty throughout the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. How appropriate that in the Bible, the preceding verse is, "And you shall hallow the 50th year," which was here the 50th year of William Penn's writing. A bell, a liberty citation, a 50th jubilee year. That put together some thinking. Those people in the State House were thinking at that time, weren't they? So, they sent the order across the sea to the Whitechapel Foundry in London, England. And the bell was forged, and it arrived approximately a year later. On March the 10th, 1753, it was hung, and holy mortification. The clapper hit the bell, and the bell cracked. Not to sound again. Two Philadelphia workers, foundry workers, named Pass and Stowe. Now, if you look very carefully at the bell, you see Pass and Stowe. Now, when I originally looked into this, I thought, well, this must mean something biblical. It means nothing biblical. The name of the men who reforged this were John Pass and John Stowe, and they put their autograph on the bell. 7 months later, that bell melted down and reforged with a little bit more copper, was hung in the belfry, and upon ringing, holy mortification, it sounded terrible. In fact, these two, Pass and Stowe, were so embarrassed by the sound of the ring and the bell that they reforged it for a third time. And finally, on July the 11th, 1753, it rang true. All 2,080 pounds of it rang true. That state house where it rang would become known as Independence Hall because of what happened there in 1776, and the sound of liberty went forth. Now, the bell would toll many times leading up to the War of Independence. When Benjamin Franklin set off from Philadelphia to bring grievances to the King of England, the colonial grievances, the bell tolled. When the Sugar Act came into being, the bell tolled. The Stamp Act, the bell tolled. And all the way up to that time when it rang on July the 8th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence was heard. After the Civil War, the nation was looking for emblems that could signal reunification, a uniting again. And of course, they found one in the American flag, but they also found one in the Liberty Bell. And so the Liberty Bell began a transcontinental journey. It was loaded onto a train, and it crisscrossed the United States. I only showed you the map of it going out, but it also came back to Philadelphia through a southern journey. And there, on stop after stop, the Liberty Bell announced that the war was over. We're one country again. And on it went, inspiring freedom. In 1915, a replica of the bell was forged. Only this time, the clapper inside the bell was chained. And it was used to promote the need for women's suffrage. And that clapper and that bell remained silent until that amendment was passed, the 19th Amendment was ratified, and then on September the 25th, 1920, it was brought to Independence Hall, the clapper unchained, liberty rang out again. So this coming Wednesday at 2 p.m. on July the 4th, descendants of those signers of the Declaration of Independence will stand by the bell and 13 times lightly tap a ring, remembering the 13 colonies. And just recently, on Martin Luther King holiday, a very gentle ringing of the bell takes place. There it is today in front of Independence Hall. So I want to think through with you this thought. The Liberty Bell, though cracked, still rings. And I want you to think about that with me. I would say to you that the cracks are, again, widening. What George Washington and Abraham Lincoln endured, we still have to face as a nation. Division. The threat of division. In Washington's 2 terms of office, other revolutions around the world, like the French Revolution, were sinking into anarchy and the terror of the guillotine. Utopian dreams were becoming nightmares. Would this be the future of the American experiment in liberty? Washington worried that our new nation would sacrifice liberty again to a monarchy or to an unruly mob. And so during his two terms of office, Washington faced a deeply divided and opposing factioned cabinet, Congress, and nation. There were secessionist movements. There was the Whiskey Rebellion, an armed rebellion, and the possibility of civil unrest becoming war. Imagine just 65 years later that possibility became a reality as the United States became the divided states with war between the states. Do you realize that in all the wars that we've fought, we've seen the deaths of 1,264,000 servicemen and women? 1.264. In the Civil War, 620,000 Americans died. That's almost half of the total of all our wars together. It is an amazing grace from God that a nation could survive such catastrophe. And yet it has. Oh, in our day we face cracks. And maybe you feel they're widening in old ways and in new ways. Our liberties threatened in old ways and in new ways. In George Washington's farewell address, this is when he said, "I will not run for a third term," and it became precedental. Not law yet by an amendment, but precedental. He wrote a 32-page farewell address, handwritten. It's one of the most memorable documents we have as a nation. And in it, he said he feared the following forces could rip apart our Democratic Republic. Three of them. Hyper-partisanship, excessive debt, and involvement in foreign wars. The very dangers we face today as a nation. Politics are crass. They can be very insulting. But that's not new. That's as old as politics in our nation. Maybe 24-hour news cycles just intensify emotions. But when I hear Galatians 5:15 written to the condition of the human heart, I almost think that it's written to the condition of a nation's heart. But if you bite and devour one another, watch out that you are not consumed by one another. Oh, we have cracks. But the exhortation inscribed on that bell still motivates, does it not? We are the recipients of a great legacy, liberty. And the exhortation on the Liberty Bell still applies to us. Proclaim that liberty across the land to all the inhabitants thereof. We can and we should celebrate liberty, even as we uphold those liberties and protect those liberties. Again, in his farewell address, Washington cited as first principles what will assure and protect liberty now and for future generations. The pursuit of peace through strength, the wisdom of moderation, and the importance of private virtue and education in order that we be a self-governing people. Peace through strength. The cost of over 1.2 million lives. Moderation. That keeps you from becoming a debtor nation, or a debtor person. And then, I get this, that somehow virtue through education must be inculcated in the people. Can you imagine that? Teaching virtue in our schools. You know, the cardinal virtues that we receive from the Greco-Roman world are prudence and justice and fortitude and temperance. And they're married to the theological virtues of faith, hope, and charity. Imagine teaching those things to our children today and impressing them upon our children. The Liberty Bell, oh man, it rings liberty throughout the land to all the inhabitants. So figuratively speaking, who shall ring that Liberty Bell today? In the United States, who shall ring it? And I would say, well, what is What is America without the engagement of all of its citizens? Every citizen has the right to ring that bell. And this includes every one of us who count ourselves as Christian citizens. For most of American history, at least culturally, Christians have resided in a duplex with a common street address. Picture this, a duplex, common street. Christians and this sense of being an American citizen, side by side, right there next to each other. And I understand that the roots of America were always people who were looking for a land where in God we could trust, but there were just as many people who were looking for a land because in gold we can trust too. And those two kind of swirled around. But for a long time, Christians influenced. There was this holiness and worldliness living right next door. Christianity could inform it, but now we have a totally different street address, just like Christians around the world. There's a hostility, and so we no longer live in that duplex.
Oh, I'll tell you, the great St. Augustine, he said that Christians are citizens of two cities, or two households, the city of God and the city of man. And so at our American residence, we still, as Christians, are citizens. And that moniker declares that we're no longer under human tyranny. It's an honorable thing to be a citizen. It distinguishes us from being just subjects of some mad dictator. Just look at Venezuela. So many other nations around the world where you're not a citizen. But at the same time, our Christian residence, our eternal address, is that we will be this in America. As Christians, we will be glad servants, glad bond slaves to our King, who, as we sang, reigns. And until this King summons us to his throne, we Christians will serve as both subjects and, by his grace, as free citizens of the USA. And we might not be in proximity, and the culture might be more and more hostile to us, but as Christian citizens, we still have a right to ring that bell. So how shall we ring it? And this is important for Christians. Shall we just ring it with nostalgia? Oh, those were the days. America is no longer what it was. I want my country back. Shall we finger point like a Pharisee? You were the problem, and you were the problem, and you were the problem. Shall we just lament, woe is us? Shall we become separatists and move out of the culture and become just a Christian ghetto? Oh, no. That's not American or Christian. No, we need to sound the bell of liberty with the sound of reason. I'm so glad that you use that phrase, with a renewed mind that can speak out biblical wisdom. With the sound of renewal. He has showed you, oh man, what is good and what does the Lord require of you? To love mercy, to do justice, and to walk humbly with your God. This is what we sound. It's the sound of hope. Our God, our help in ages past, our hope for years to come. It's the sound of engagement, not separation. Okay. Who shall ring? We have a right to ring. How shall it sound? It shall sound positive. But what's the content? What shall we really ring out in this land of ours? Well, I just want you to know that the Protestant Reformation, of which we are heirs, has six legacies, at least, that are deeply embedded in the mind of America, in this wonderful American experiment. And here they are. The first is a limited charter for the government. That means small government, and it does not want a totalitarian government. Limited checks and balances, divided powers, because we have to address the reality of human depravity. A belief that all governments are judged by a transcendent moral norm. This is the Ten Commandments. A persistent opposition to secular authority is the primary basis for political structure. And basically what that means is this, that we acknowledge that there is a God. And it should never be trite when a politician or anybody else says, "And God bless America." Because without God blessing America, America will be unblessed. An abiding emphasis on the family as the essential building block of successful government. Just an aside, and I'll email me later, but I think this is one of the most missing matters that is spoken publicly by our politicians. That every nation is built on that foundational block of a family. And we're afraid to say it. And then finally, a view of the law is necessary and not subjective. All right, almost done here, gang. These ideas aren't new. They're as old as America, but they ring throughout the world. There's just one more very important matter that we need as Christian citizens to ring out to our nation. And it comes from that Leviticus 25 passage. Remember, it says, proclaim liberty throughout the land. That has an important context. Did you hear the context in Leviticus chapter 12? It's the year of Jubilee. Every 50 years, according to the law of God, for Israel, okay? Every 50 years, indentured servants and slaves were set free. The land was returned to its original owner if it went into foreclosure. Hold on. Debts were canceled. Now, I have all kinds of questions about how this actually worked. And if it worked. I do. I have questions about it, but this is what God put forward. The object of the year of Jubilee was liberty. It was to break all oppression. All bondage of the people was wiped away and they would have freedom to start afresh. It was also a year of agricultural rest. There would be no farming during this year. God promised to abundantly bless crops and orchards, so the people had to trust God and glean from what He would provide. And He did provide. So the focus of the year was on God and restoration, not farming, not money, not social problems. This Jubilee year for Israel was pointing to the Jubilee that the Messiah would bring. It would set the stage for the vision of what the Messiah would bring in His reign, a continual Jubilee. All oppression would end under His rule. Justice and truth would reign under His rule. The land would be restored like a Garden of Eden. But wait, there's one more really important consideration you need to think through. When did the year of Jubilee start in that 49th year? It started in the seventh month. The seventh month was the Feast of Trumpets, and the first day was Israel's beginning of their new year. But the scriptures that you heard read said that's not when the year of Jubilee would start. On the first day, it would start on the tenth day, and the tenth day was the Day of Atonement. The day on which the people of Israel were to face the reality of their own sin. And to receive grace in an odd way through the lamb that would be sent out of the community, the ram. The Day of Atonement is directly linked to the beginning of the year of Jubilee and shows the complete picture of the Messiah's reign. The people would be free of all bondage, all debt, even their debt to God, their sins would be forgiven. And the weight of debt and social problems would be done away with under the Messiah. Complete liberty. I got to thinking about this. for us? What are we to proclaim? Yeah, we have a right to ring the bell. We need to ring the bell with the right attitude. But ultimately, what are we here as Christian citizens to ultimately proclaim? And it hit me that there is a liberty, which is the foundation of all liberty. And that liberty that is the foundation of all other liberties is digested in that one sentence Jesus said, "When the Son makes you free, you'll be free indeed." I didn't plan to interview you, but I can think of no better example of what it means for the Son to set you free than the testimony that you gave to this church. Can you imagine 240 citizens like him? Yeah, the Liberty Bell is cracked, but it still rings. So now we as Christians do not say farewell, Liberty Bell. We say farewell, Liberty Bell. Farewell, as you have through periods of civil unrest and racial disharmony and changing social mores. And so today, we thank God, the author of our American liberty, and the true source of all unalienable rights that our founding documents declare, in which our unique in the world system of government guarantees and still strives to maintain for its citizens. Let freedom ring. Farewell, Liberty Bell. By God's grace, farewell.